You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
You never want to find yourself out on the water fishing without the essentials. So it's best to always pack a Columbia PFG Solar Stream Elite hoodie to protect against the sun. I mean, it provides great protection and it's really breathable so you don't get hot. That's a win-win. Columbia PFG has a lot of great gear. So before you head out on the water, head over to Columbia.com/PFG to shop their performance fishing gear.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
You know that feeling when you walk into your home, take a deep breath, and feel new? Well, that's what it's like to use Clorox Scentiva. Because Clorox Scentiva smells like coconut, cleans like Clorox, and feels like energy. It'll elevate any cleaning routine to not just clean, but also make every room smell like a tropical coconut getaway. Discover how Clorox Scentiva's powerful clean and refreshing scents can transform your space. Get yours in coconut or other fabulous scents at a nearby retail store.
Live Nation presents Concert Week. Now through May 14th, get $25 tickets to over 5,000 shows. That's up to 75% off a summer full of your favorite artists like 21 Savage, Alanis Morissette, Cage the Elephant, Celeste Barber, Dierks Bentley, Fade, Hootie and the Blowfish, Janet Jackson, Kidz Bop Kids, Meghan Trainor, Bizzle Fuma, Sarah McLachlan. Get tickets to more than 5,000 summer shows for just $25. Until now through May 14th. Visit LiveNation.com/Concert Week to learn more and plan your summer with Sean Paul, Sum 41, 30 Seconds to Mars, oh, and Two Door Cinema Club.
And now, Move the Sticks with Daniel Jeremiah and Bucky Brooks.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Move the Sticks. DJ Bucky back together again. Buck, we've got a big weekend of football. We've got some college championship games. We've got a great NFL slate. Actually, a really intriguing Thursday night football matchup this evening. But you've got your big state playoff game this weekend, and it's just that time of year, man. It just feels it's real football time right now. How you doing, man?
Hey, man, I'm doing great. DJ, it is that time of year. And, you know, we can talk about, like, the pros and college and that stuff, and even, like, my high school stuff. Like, that's really fun. But I don't know if you know this about me. Years ago, when I was 14, I played on a national champion Pop Warner team. And so youth football is near and dear to my heart. So I'm just hoping today that we can bring somebody on who knows a little bit about how to get it done at a youth football level, because we talk about having those other things covered, but youth football is where it's at. So maybe you can kind of help us find somebody that can lend some expertise to being able to win at the lower levels.
I've got great news for you, because you didn't know this, but I've secured a guest is actually a Pop Warner coach who's got a chance to go chase a title right now. We're able to hunt this down, do some research, and found one. So we're going to go ahead and bring him in right now. I think he played in the NFL maybe for a minute or two. Luke Kuechly. Yeah, I think he did. He had a little bit of success in the NFL, but we'll get to all the NFL stuff in a minute. Luke, welcome to the show, buddy. We want to know, first and foremost, start this thing off right, what you and Greg Olsen are up to, and what do we need to do to chase a championship in Orlando?
Well, it sounds like Bucky's got the secret. He said he already won one. We're heading down to Orlando this weekend for the Pop Warner Championship. It's going to be a ton of fun. We play at Camping World Stadium. It's going to be super exciting for the kids. I'm looking forward to it. Greg and I have been trying to figure out what our defensive game plan is going to be the past 24 hours in anticipation of going down there. But it's exciting. It's going to be fun. I'm looking forward to it. The weather is going to be a lot different down there in Florida than it is in Charlotte right now. So hopefully our kids, our coaches, all of us are ready to rock.
That should be a lot of fun, Luke. How long have you been coaching youth ball? And I have to ask you this, because you dealt with the complexity of being in the pros. How long did it take you to figure out how to simplify things so that your little guys can understand exactly what you're asking them to do.
Yeah, we got started back in July, and we had all these ideas of, all right, we're going to be a four down front. We're going to have pressures from both sides and up the middle. And it all sounded good. We had it all in. All the kids were great. The first game comes around and we got whacked. We weren't ready for it. The defense did not work how I expected it to. So the next week we came back and we just went to a traditional five down front and set some good edges and let our guys run around and play football. And it was so funny. I was talking to Greg about it yesterday of when I was playing in Carolina, I always loved it when we were simple on defense. Let us line up. Let us get a look at the offense. Let us go play. And I always got frustrated when it was complicated and we had all these shifts and motions and rotations and checks. And then I start to go coach this little youth football team. And then I'm doing the same thing. I like looks, rotations, different blitzes. The first year, the first game didn't go well. It wasn't the kids' fault at all. I thought this stuff would come together great and it didn't. And then the next week we come out, we go to a more traditional front. We were good to go. So it's just funny how it mimics the NFL, even though it's 11-year football. Simple is easy is good. Let the guys go out there and play.
I have to imagine, I've been around the youth football world a little bit, that you get some opponents and some opposing coaches that are absolutely jonesing to try and take down the two NFL guys on the opposite sideline. Have you had any interesting experiences with opposing coaches this year?
No, we've been in really good shape. It's been fun. You see a lot of the coaches around though. So we had a scrimmage earlier in the year. We met one of the coaches on one of the opposing teams that was a really good team. That was the Police Athletic League here. They had good players. They were athletic. They had a good scheme. So we met the coach there. We had a preseason scrimmage against him in the Panther Stadium. And it was a little bit scary when some of those kids got in space because we're like, uh-oh, these kids, we haven't seen any kids like this all year. And then we played that same team again in the city championship game. So we didn't have any, we had a great time with all the coaches, but that coach from that team was great. We met him early in the season. We had a scrimmage against him. And then we played him in the city championship game. And he couldn't have been better. He was great to us. He gave us a lot of encouragement moving forward. But, man, it was a great experience. Greg's dad helped coach, too. He coached forever in Jersey and a ton of success up there at Wayne Hill. So we had a good crew of coaches, and it was a ton of fun for us.
Well, now this is easy because, I'm sure you're paying attention to the National Football League, and the new trend is take someone who's coached at a lower level and give them a head coaching job. So now you can follow in the footsteps of my buddy Jeff Saturday, and you're ready. You're ready to be an NFL head coach. I mean, you're doing it at the youth level, so you might as well try your hand at it. Would you, if you had an opportunity, seriously, would you think about ever being a head coach in the National Football League?
I think it would be a ton of fun. You know what I miss about the NFL? I miss about being around the guys in the locker room, at practice, all the relationships that you have with the guys, with the people that work there, the people, the front office people, the support staff, the trainers, the coaches, the weight room guys, the equipment guys. That's what I miss the most. And I think being a head coach would give you that opportunity to get back in the stadium. But I don't know if I could handle that right now. I got my hands full trying to figure out what defense we're going to play this week when we go down to Florida. But the game of football is so special, and any way to get back in that building would be a ton of fun.
It's interesting you talk about coaching, Luke. I went back through, and we've talked about it before, went back and looked through your report. And I can only remember two players I ever evaluated in college as they were getting ready to enter the NFL that I actually put in my report, this guy would be a great head coach. It was you, and it was D'Amico Ryans. Now, D'Amico Ryans has got the 49er defense playing at an elite level. He's going to be a head coach this next year. So, if you ever wanted to go down that path, I'm sure there'll be plenty of opportunities for you. But I want to transition a little bit, get your thoughts on some of the stuff that's going on in the league right now, because you're such a great resource for us. When you look around the league right now, we've talked about it a lot, about this league being obsessed with taking away explosives. We've seen so many light box counts now. Now you're starting to see it trend back where teams are starting to run the football more. The running game has kind of reemerged in the NFL at this point in time. Did you notice that during your time in the league, how things just, they never go away? It just feels like things are constantly cycling around.
Yeah, and it's a cause and effect thing. So when I first got in, it was 21 personnel running the ball, two back sets, 12 personnel running the ball, throwing play action off of it. And that honestly was really good for me early in my career because I felt like that's what I did really well. And then as time progressed, especially within our division, you know, Sean Payton always had the guy out of the backfield. You know, then he had Sproles, and then he had Kamara, and then you look at what Atlanta was able to do with Freeman, and then down in Tampa, they always had a dude that they could get the ball to in space. So early in my career, it was downhill football. Then it slowly transitioned to more of that spread game. And like you said, a lot of that Fangio defenses started to kind of kick back in where you're showing different looks, you're playing too high, you're daring them to run the ball, you're tackling it for 4.5 yards and saying, hey, run it again, or you're going to throw it and you're going to throw it right into us. And then now slowly people have kind of gotten away from throwing the ball down the field. And like you said, now it's pound the ball, pound the ball, pound the ball, control the clock. That's what we did in Carolina last week against Denver. That really good defense, that split safety with the rotation down. We ran the ball like 40 times for 4.5 yards a carry, controlled the clock, took a couple calculated shots. I think everybody moves off of each other. So offense dictates, defense changes. Once defense changes and has success, the offense has to come back around and reinvent themselves. So scoring's been down in the league this year from the last couple of years. And I think a lot of it has to do with how people are controlling the ball, running the football, throwing more play action off of it.
You know, it's funny because you brought up the Carolina Panthers. I was eventually going to get there, but I want to get your take now. Steve Wilks has jumped in as the interim head coach. And by all accounts, it looks like he's done a pretty solid job. Take me back to your time playing in Carolina when Wilks was there. What about him may allow him to be a really solid head coach for the Panthers at this moment?
Well, I think when I first got there, he was a defensive backs coach. So he came in, he was coaching DBs, and what he did a really good job of, he was a big time relationship guy. He could talk to all the guys, he could get on them hard, but they all know that he cared about them. And there's coaches that can do that. But the other thing that he was able to do really well is develop players. And I think the one guy that everybody thinks about, that I certainly think about, is Josh Norman. When Josh came in, he was super talented, big, long, athletic, great ball skills. And Wilks really brought him in and coached him up and made Josh one of the best corners in the NFL. So I think he became our defensive coordinator for a year after McDermott left for Buffalo. So he can do everything from coaching to mentoring to relationship side. We've had success with him in Carolina back when Coach Rivera was here and he was a coordinator and the DB coach. But the one thing that I think Wilks does an exceptional job of is the relationship side and how he treats guys. And he knows he's from the Carolinas. He knows about it. He's from right down the street from the stadium. It's a great match. And the guys really enjoy him. He's done a great job. He can motivate them. He can teach them. And the relationship side and his ability to talk to the players, I think, is what sets him apart from a lot of people. Obviously, the X's and O's and the ability to manage the game is great, but his ability to connect and talk to guys and get on guys, but the guys all understand that he loves them and he cares about them. I think that's his most unique trait, and I think that's what's allowed him to be successful.
Yeah, it's not a surprise, Luke. App State, that's all we do is produce winners.
There you go.
I mean, Buckeye's a North Carolina guy. That's what we do up there. Hey, if an owner, I'm not just any owner, came up to you and said, we need to hire a head coach, an NFL head coach. You know, if we were going to start the priority list of the three or four characteristics or, you know, in your opinion, what would lead to a successful tenure as a head coach? If you had to identify three or four of those characteristics, what would they be?
Oh, man. I think number one, managing people. How well do you manage a group of people around you? So your coaches, your players, your support staff. I think the second thing is who are they going to bring in to be your coordinators and your coaches? I think a lot of it has to do with you might have one or two coaches, but if you're weak in one side of the ball, then you get exposed there. So how do you manage people? Who are you going to bring in to be your coordinators and then your coaches? I think those are the two most important things. And then is that guy going to call plays? Are you going to call plays on the defensive side of the ball? Or are you going to call plays on the offensive side of the ball? I think those are the three things that you really have to figure out if you're looking at coaches is managing who you're going to bring in as coaches and then who's calling plays and how do you give out responsibility? I think those are three really important things. And when we had success with Coach Rivera, I think he had a really good feel for that. He was great at managing people. He hired really good coaches and he let those coaches call the defenses. So we had McDee and Wilks and then Shula and all those guys did a great job. And it was, and we obviously had Norv too. So he had a ton of confidence in our guys calling plays. So I think those are three easy things right off the bat that come to my mind that are important.
You know, and thinking about that, I want to kind of expand upon that conversation because you bring up Ron Rivera. Ron Rivera was a former player, had a lot of success in the league. There's some coaching staffs around the league that are really populated with former players. Having played for a former player, what advantages might a former player have when it comes to coaching young players, developing young players, and kind of being a leader of a team that may have some young players throughout the roster?
Well, he's been there. So, you know, you take Ron, for example. I was very fortunate because he played the same position as me, obviously, but he's been the training camp. He's been banged up. He's been sore. He's fought through injuries. He knows what it's like to be tired mid-season, end of the season. But then me specifically, not only did he play, but he played at a high level on a really good defense, and they won a Super Bowl, obviously the 85 Bears. But the other thing that helped me a lot is that he had that relationship with Urlacher in Chicago. So he coached Brian, he coached Briggs, he coached Hunter Hillenmeyer. All three of those guys were a little bit different type of players. So then when he got to Carolina, he could talk to me about things. So if it was like, you know, playing cover two, running down the middle, he'd watch me do something. He'd be like, hey, how do you like to play this? And I'd be like, well, this is how I want to play cover two. I want to pedal out. I feel like I get good vision on the quarterback. I feel like I can break left and right. He's like, okay, that's really good. This is another way to do it. This is how Brian did it. And this is why he did it. And I think that was always super important to me of he's played the position. He understands it. He coached arguably one of the best linebackers ever in Urlacher that played a lot in space, was a great blitzer, was really good in coverage. He had so many different little nuggets of levels of playing, from being a player to coaching one of the best ever to now being the head coach. He had a really good feel for teaching, and he was never like my way or the highway. It was like, how do you see it? This is how I see it. This is how a third party in Urlacher sees it. And he was able to kind of bring it all together. And I think that's what made Ron special, is his ability to kind of be around the building, to coach guys on the side, to talk to guys and form relationships. So then when things were difficult and a guy was having a bad day, coaches were on him. Ron wasn't ever really on him. The coordinators were on him, the position coaches were on him. And then coach could go over there and talk to him, be like, hey, what's going on? Everything okay? And he had relationships with guys, and they'd be willing to open up with him. And then Ron would get a different side of the story, and then boom, he could go relay it to everybody else. And then you could put the whole picture together. And I think that's what made him really special.
There's a cliche that people throw around, and I tend to believe it, which is teams will take on the identity of their head coach. And you just talked about Ron Rivera, what he was as a player, kind of the toughness that he exuded. I think about the great teams that you played on. That was apparent there. You think about Washington, when they're going well, it's the same type of thing. They're a physical team trying to run the football. I think a guy like Mike Vrabel, you know, what he was as a player almost mimics what he's built there with the Tennessee Titans. Have you seen that throughout your career, not only for the coaches you played with, but just looking around the league, that you can get, you know, certain teams have identities, and that comes from the head coach?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you go back looking at, there's a couple names, obviously, you look at it, Vrabel, obviously, Harbaugh, we played them when he was in San Francisco, and they were just heavy thumpers downhill, but very smart and very intuitive with how they did things. I think you look at kind of, you know, what Ron and Coach Rivera made here in Carolina, where we were tough, we were physical, but guys really cared a lot about each other and played hard for each other. I think you look at what McDermott has done up in Buffalo, just talking about guys that I know really well. He is just like a tough wrestler, fighter, competitive. And you look around that team, that's how all those guys are, from Josh to Diggs to the offensive line to, you know, Matt Milano. They're guys off the edge with Vaughn, and then their inside push with Ed Oliver. And then you look in the back, you know, Jordan Poyer is one of my favorite guys to watch. Just tough, physical attitude. And I think you're 100% right. Guys, people take on the mindset of their head coach. And I think that's what's so cool. To each team is so different. When you go, Seattle was like that with Pete Carroll, just tough physical attitude. We're going to run the ball at your face. We're going to play good defense. That's what I think makes the NFL so special. You look at Andy Reid with the Chiefs. He's so creative, and he's opened the new concepts. And you look at them on offense, and some of the stuff that they do, it's like, how did you guys even think of that? How Kelsey runs routes, how Mahomes throws the ball, how they get guys in space. you can just look over there and Andy Reid, you can just tell he's like, all right, boom, we've got space on the field here. I've got this guy. I can utilize a big guy in space. Like it's so fun. And I think that's what makes the NFL so cool is that every game that you play, they're going to run the ball, they're going to throw it, but how they go about doing it is so unique to each individual team.
You know, look, I want to go like a little deeper when it comes to playing defense, because there's kind of been a renaissance. DJ talked about teams going back to the running game to attack the light boxes, but teams are also going away from some of the zone schemes that are very prevalent the last few years to more gap schemes where you're seeing guards and tackles pull. As a linebacker, can you kind of break it down, like the differences and the challenges in dealing with the pullers and the gap schemes as opposed to the traditional zone schemes that were popular as recent as a few years ago?
Yeah, I love gap scheme runs. And the reason I say that, because all your wide zone stuff, it's going to push, it's going to push, it's going to push. Then there's levels in the offensive line in the defense that change running lanes. So you might line up, you might be a B gap player, but then a three technique gets reached, and then it's a gap exchange, and then I get vertical, and then I get washed by. Then there's like a secondary crease that gets created because me and the defensive tackle are on different levels. I hate wide zone. You can't get downhill, attack, be physical, because that zone, that gap is constantly moving. And I think it's a pain in the butt, and it relies heavily on your edge guys versus gap scheme runs where it's double teams. It's everything happens, in my opinion, where it's supposed to. So if they're going to run power, I know what my read is. Check the A gap, get over the top of the double team, and I'm going to fit inside the guard. For me, it takes more time. It's easier. The read and my footwork is way easier. I feel like I can be more patient. I can get in phase better. I don't feel like I'm rushed to get to a certain gap. I love gap scheme. I'd rather you run power. I'd rather you run counter. I'd rather you run one back lead ISO, because I know exactly where the ball needs to hit. I know exactly where my gap is going to be. I know where the big guys are going to be. I know how they're going to block it. I know if I get over a guy, then I'm clean. I loved gap scheme. I'd rather play it every time because if you run a run game stunt and you blitz off an open side and it's wide zone, those gaps can just get so muddy and get washed down. And then before you know it, now there's a huge crease right there. Versus gap scheme, if you do that inside stunt, you know exactly where your force player is going to be. You know exactly who's going to block the down that stunt into the B gap. It just makes everything for me so much cleaner. And if you'd ask an offensive guy, they'd probably say the exact opposite thing of me. But I love gap schemes. If you could say you can play zone or gap schemes the rest of your life, I'm playing gap schemes.
Oh, that's great stuff, man. I'll tell you what, watching tape on a weekly basis, there's a lot of linebackers that are not as comfortable fitting up in those gap schemes as you are. You see a lot of misfits. We've seen some big runs pop. I just think these guys haven't seen it a lot. They haven't seen it a lot in college, and now they haven't seen it the last few years in the NFL, and now it's all back, as we were kind of talking about earlier, everything being pretty cyclical there. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, plenty more to get to with Pop Warner coaching legend Luke Kuechly.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower, 37 minutes later, because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day. And smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
Hey guys, this is Matt Jones, Drew Franklin from the Fade This podcast. We got a great episode coming up, picks in all the sports, football, basketball, we do them all, but here's a preview of this week's episode. Do you think it's more embarrassing to dye your hair or to have hair plugs?
I don't think either are embarrassing if you're not trying to conceal it and act like you didn't.
Okay, so you think if you just come out and go, I got hair plugs...
Yeah, like check out these hair. I mean, don't just walk around, hey, tapping, hey, stranger, I don't want you thinking this is natural. You know, but I mean,
do you ever do that with everyone you meet?
Some people try to act like they, you know what I mean?
Yeah. But I mean, like John Cena got it. You know, when John Cena came back to wrestling, he had a bald spot, and now he doesn't. Mm-hmm. You think he should be required in all interviews to say, look, by the way, I covered up my bald spot?
Yeah, I guess it's weird. I mean, you don't wear a sign or like put a sign in your yard, but.
All right, so what about toupees?
Those are the most obvious.
But let's say you're like Bill Self and you can get it to where it looks good.
His is magical. I don't even know if his is a toupee.
It is.
I think he went into the future and had a procedure we haven't even discovered yet.
And this episode was brought to you in partnership with DraftKings. To hear more, listen and subscribe to Fade This on iHeartRadio or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snag a Job's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snag a Job is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Like many of us, you might think identity theft will never happen to you. But consider this. There's a new identity theft victim every 3 seconds in the U.S. That's over 15 million people by the end of this year, equal to the populations of New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago combined. Even worse, identity theft victims often don't even know they're victims. That's why LifeLock Identity Theft Protection alerts you to identity threats, even the ones that don't show up on a credit report, like data breaches, fraudulent bank transactions, loan and credit card applications, and crimes committed in your name. If your identity is stolen, your own dedicated LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will work to fix it. LifeLock protects you in ways that you simply can't on your own. Join now and save up to 25% your first year at LifeLock.com/iHeart. That's LifeLock.com/iHeart to save up to 25%. Identity theft protection starts here.
Picasso knows your vacation home is your best home. It's the place that brings family and friends together. It's where you're the best version of yourself. Picasso makes it easy to co-own a luxury vacation home in amazing locations. Listings start at $200K for 1/8 ownership. Picasso does the hard parts for you. Luxury furnishings, maintenance, billing, scheduling, and more. With a home management team that provides support before, during, and after your stay, so you can focus on the relaxing, hosting, and making memories with family and friends. And you can resell on Picasso's marketplace anytime, historically for a 10% gain. With Picasso, you can stop saying someday and start building family traditions today in a vacation home you own and revisit time after time. Visit Picasso.com today to see thousands of luxury vacation home listings. That's PACASO.com.
All right, we're back with Luke Kuechly. And Luke, I want to hit you on a couple more NFL topics here before we transition and do some scouting talk, which I'm really looking forward to. But we've talked about this throughout the year. It feels like when you look around the league this year, I know you've got Kansas City, you've got Buffalo. I know Philly, their record is what it is. You see Dallas starting to surge a little bit. But it really feels like it's kind of just getting the tournament year. Just find your way, get in the tournament. Anything can happen once you get there. You remember during your time in the league where that was the case, where you thought, man, we might not be a great team, but I don't know if there is a great team out there. Guys, we just got to find a way to get in the playoffs, and we'll take our chances once we get there.
Absolutely. That's how we kind of were in 2014. We won 7-8-1 and snuck into the playoffs. Our division was really down. We got a home game and won a game. And so I think there's that side of it. Then I also think teams that are leading divisions, they start looking around like, all right, who are the teams that are leading the divisions? Okay, we're going to win the division. Who are we going to play in a wild card? And then you start looking around, you're like, man, I hope that team continues to lose. I think San Francisco was that team earlier in the year. Obviously, they've kind of started to really get it going and kick it in the gear. But that would be a team that you'd look at and you'd be like, man, I don't want to play them the first round of the playoffs. They'd be an absolute disaster to play against. They're super good on defense. They play really well on offense. They can run the ball. And you kind of look at it now, that's like what the NFC East looks like. Philly, Dallas, New York, and then obviously Washington. I think Philly and Dallas will be one of those teams that'll win that division. But could you imagine winning your division, getting a home game and then drawing Philly or Dallas to play them week one in the playoffs, I think that'd be a disaster. You wouldn't want to do that at all. Same thing with the AFC East with Buffalo and Miami. One of those teams is going to be a wild card. And all these teams that look around where they just tried so hard to win the division, they get the home game and boom, now you have Tua in that offense coming to you for the first round of the playoffs. It's like, it's a disaster. So this time of the year, you kind of get in December, the playoffs start to kind of take shape. And then you're like, man, who could we potentially play? And I think there's a couple teams around the NFL this year. They're like, if we draw that team the first round of the playoffs, we're not feeling great about it.
Look, I want to lean on your expertise because you played on playoff teams. You listed out two different scenarios in terms of how your team has gone into the postseason. If a head coach asks you, heading into December, how can I get my team to play the best football heading down the stretch? What advice would you give him?
At this point in the season, I think it's all about guys being healthy, right? For the most part, all these teams that are playing good football and have good records are going to be in the playoffs. I think they understand what they are, what their identity is, how they're playing on defense, all their responsibilities. But then once you get to December and then in the January in the playoffs, it's who's the healthiest team out there? Who feels the best? Who's got most of their guys around and healthy? And then going into the playoffs, guys just need to be healthy. They need to feel fast. They need to feel explosive. You don't want to limp into the playoffs and then beat your chest and say, hey, we're in, but half of my guys are banged up. We're not going to be able to make a run. Or would you rather be the team that, hey, our guys are healthy, we took them out of pads, maybe we've got a lot more walkthroughs, guys are locked in during the week, show up on Sundays and get it done. And I think that's what we did a really good job with in Carolina was that 2015 season, the year we went to the Super Bowl, we were really light at practice, guys were locked in, we had a lot of older guys, we knew what we were on offense and defense, and we had such productive practices Wednesday, Thursday, Friday without going full speed because we understood, hey, if we get our good mental reps in, if we get our good looks in and we take this thing seriously, we don't have to put pads on. We don't have to put our helmet on. We don't have to run fast. We don't have to go hit guys. And not only does that kind of calm you down physically, but I think it also gives you a break mentally. The only thing I have to worry about at practice right now is my alignment. Where do I got to be? What do I got to do? You don't have to worry about, man, like I'm going to have to go chase this guy. Got to put my hands on this guy. It's just one less thing that you got to worry about as a player. So it's, hey, boom, I'm going to go out here. I'm going to get my reps. I'm going to recover mentally, but I'm also going to recover physically because I know when it gets into January, it's a 1 week at a time season. Win and continue, lose and go home. So, and then you can really crank it back up that week going to the playoffs. But I think in December, you have so many guys that get banged up throughout the season that, boom, if I can really capitalize on these last 4 weeks, our guys understand what's going on and I can get everybody healthy going into the playoffs, I think that puts you in the best position moving into January.
How was postseason ball different? I mean, your first playoff game, you know, everybody talks about the adjustment you make from high school to college or from your college, you know, to the NFL and starting as a rookie. But what was it like in your first postseason game and how was it different than just a regular season game?
Yeah, the first postseason game that we played was 2013. We had a home game against San Francisco. San Francisco, the year before, was in the Super Bowl. They played Baltimore, so they had been there and done it. They had been in the playoffs before. That whole roster was basically back. I was going into my second year, and I just remember all the older guys. We had older guys in our team that had been in the playoffs, and they're like, it's going to be faster, it's going to be more physical, and there's going to be a different energy in the game. And I was like, okay, sure. Like, I've gone from preseason to regular season. I understand that. But then you get in there, and I'll tell you what, man, it's different. I think a lot of the reason it's different is because each play matters that much more. And you can't just slip up and give up a 35-yard gain and then them kick a field goal and 3 points. You can't be like, hey, we got to stop. It's like, no, like those are 3 points that we're now going to have to get on the offensive side of the ball. And to me, the energy was different in the sense of each play matters. You got to play each play as hard as you can. You're not taking plays off. Every time the ball gets run outside, I'm sprinting there because you don't know if somebody's going to miss a tackle or and you got to clean it up or the same thing. The same thing applies for the guys on offense too, that every route's got to be right. Every depth's got to be right. You got to fight for every yard you can get. Penalties are big. That's what killed us in that first game were penalties and just not, I don't think I wasn't ready for that moment as a second year player. I was excited. We were in the playoffs. We had a home game. We had a first round bye. Everything was rolling. And then it's like, man, it happens faster. The guys are more physical. The game plan I felt like was a lot tighter on San Fran's side. They said, we're going to line up. We're going to run the ball at your face. We're going to take a couple shots. Kaepernick's going to pull the ball and get on the edge. that was the biggest difference to me. Guys were playing faster, more physical, but every play, there was just that added pressure that you never know when that play in the game is going to happen that's going to dictate either a win or a loss.
You know, and thinking about that, because postseason ball is where legends are made. And so much of the game is about quarterback play. In your estimation, what's the difference between those great quarterbacks in the postseason and those guys that simply are unable to get it done?
I think not being afraid to make a mistake. You know, sometimes you got to fit a ball in there. Sometimes you got to throw it. I never obviously played quarterback, so I don't know what it was like for those guys, but I knew going into that second year. So my first year we played San Francisco, and after about the first quarter, I was like, all right, I got beat by Vernon Davis for a touchdown in the end zone. And I remember him, he ran a 7 route. This was like a goal line play. And I remember watching him. I was connected to him, and he was right on the end line of the end zone. And I remember thinking, boom, I'll just push him out of bounds. Then that way he can't catch the ball. The play's dead. Then I can pick up somebody else and go make a play on the ball. And I remember thinking in my head, it happened so fast. I was like, man, if I push him too hard and then they throw a flag, then it's pass interference, and then they're going to get the ball on the 1 yard line, 1st and 10. And I didn't make that play. I very well could have pushed him out, and he ended up catching the ball, and that was the difference in the game. Then you fast forward to the next year, we played Arizona at home, and I played really well. And I think a lot of it had to do with me saying, I'm in the playoffs. I'm going to make plays. I'm going to make them call stuff, and I'm going to go play my game and take chances and be confident with what I'm doing and take calculated risks. I think that was the biggest difference for me. I'm sure it's probably very similar for a lot of positions in quarterback as well, where it's, hey, you get into the playoffs, go play your game. Don't be afraid of the moment. And I think that was one thing that from that first year to the second year was going with the mindset of, hey, I'm here to make plays. I'm not here to make mistakes. And I think that's what switched for me going in from my second year to my third year in the playoffs.
No, I love that, man. To me, it's like you watch a game and you'll see it in a big moments. You'll see teams that play a little bit scared, a little bit tight, a little bit conservative. And you'll see teams maybe take a risk, be a little bit aggressive, push the envelope. It seems like more often than not, those are the teams that absolutely end up getting rewarded. All right, we're going to take another quick break. We come back, we're going to talk about some scouting ideas and get some thoughts from Luke as we continue on here with the former All-Pro, Luke Kuechly.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower, 37 minutes later, because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day. And smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
What's up? I'm John Wall.
And I'm CJ Toledano, and we're starting a new podcast presented by DraftKings called Point Game. We're now joined by 3-time NBA Sixth Man of the Year, elite bucket getter. Let's please welcome Jamal Crawford to Point Game, King of the Court one-on-one tournament. If they had it back in your prime, do you think he could have took it all?
I'm going to be honest with you. I don't think I could have took it all, but I think I would have shocked a lot of people. I think Kobe and everybody in their prime, Kobe would win a one-on-one contest.
Yeah, because you got to think, he's going to guard. He don't care about guarding.
He's going to guard.
He's going to guard. Like, you see him in the Olympics, he's going to guard. And then on top of
that. Like that, see that?
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Sam Cassell to Point Game.
I remember you came to my room crying tears. I mean, he was in a culture shock. And then he's going to withdraw us about winning.
Remember what I told you? I said, OG, you think I can get paid and go back and play in college? Because it ain't it.
Check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, DraftKings YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer? Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Picasso knows your vacation home is your best home. It's the place that brings family and friends together. It's where you're the best version of yourself. Picasso makes it easy to co-own a luxury vacation home in amazing locations. Listings start at $200K for 1/8 ownership. Picasso does the hard parts for you. Luxury furnishings, maintenance, billings, scheduling, and more. With a home management team that provides support before, during, and after your stay so you can focus on the relaxing, hosting, and making memories with family and friends. And you can resell on Picasso's marketplace anytime, historically for a 10% gain. With Picasso, you can stop saying someday and start building family traditions today in a vacation home you own and revisit time after time. Visit Picasso.com today to see thousands of luxury vacation home listings. That's PACASO.com.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
NFL Plus is here, which means no matter where you are, this is how you football. With NFL Plus, watch live, local, and primetime games on mobile and listen to live game audio now through Super Bowl 57. Sign up for the rest of the season with a special offer of $19.99 by going to plus.nfl.com and sign up now. All right, this is what I've been looking forward to in our visit with Luke Kuechly, talking about some scouting and always trying to learn and grow in what we're doing. Luke, last time we visited, we asked you for a stat that would be a good one where we're watching off-the-ball linebackers and something we could dig into a little bit. You talked about tackles for loss or tackles for no gain. And, you know, I was looking through, and it was, ironically, the linebackers leading the NFL right now in TFLs or tackles for no gain, off-the-ball linebackers, Matt Milano, who's playing for a guy in Sean McDermott that you already referenced a little bit earlier here. But I love that in trying to identify things that maybe other people are missing. So I want to give you the opportunity. Could be a stat, could be anything just from a skill set standpoint with where you see where the game is going as we forecast in the future. What's something that maybe we're missing when you're evaluating off-the-ball linebackers?
Oh, man. I think everybody looks at interceptions, obviously, but I don't think people always look at passes defended from guys coming out. And I think that is a big metric, not only because it's the same thing as a no game play. It's a batted ball, first and 10 to second and 10. But I also think it shows that guys have a feel for coverage and they're also always around the ball. And I think that's something that I think would be important. Everybody can look at tackles, height, weight, speed, but passes defended not only dictate a no game play, but it shows that the guy's got ability to be around the ball. He can play in coverage, and especially now with the way the league has transferred, all these backers have to be able to, if you're a weak side backer, you got to be able to cover a back out of the backfield, whether it's, you know, a Christian, a Saquon, those type of guys, or if you're a Mike backer, kind of like Tremaine Edmonds, the guy in Buffalo next to Milano, you got to be able to cover Kelce and Kittle and guys like, you know, back when I was playing Olsen. The game's changing, and you know, we talked about the run game a little bit, but the ability to play in coverage and limit obvious, you know, third down conversions, easy first down throws, make it second and short. That passes defended thing, that passes defended stat for me is a big one.
You know, it's funny you bring that up because so much of the game is about trying to create mismatches, and the linebackers are the ones who are frequently picked on. So expanding upon that thought, when you're looking at Mike linebackers or you're looking at linebackers, off-the-ball linebackers, what are the traits that I need to look for to determine if a linebacker might have the ability to be really good in coverage?
The one guy that I always think about that I played with is Thomas. Thomas was one of the best, I think, to ever do that. I think it started with just his numbers, right? He was a 4-4 guy, and he had really good length. And I think that was one thing that helped him a lot. Anybody that's got speed and length can cover up a lot. I think he had a really good feel for routes, and I think he was very fit. He was physical. So at the top end of the route, and he was physical and strong, at the top end of the route, guys couldn't push off of him. You get up to him and he was just like a magnet. He would stay stuck on you. He could convert. He could get his hands out. And he was very good with staying in phase. So a lot of these guys, they're going to come up. They're going to try to stem you. They're going to try to break away from leverage. Thomas had a great feel and was really never out of position. he felt comfortable in his ability to get vertical with his speed. He had good length to kind of convert, but his ability to stay strong and play physical through contact, through hand fighting, through pushing off, allowed him to get back in phase on that tight end. So if a guy comes up, he runs an outside breaking route, TD could stay with him vertically because of his speed. He had a great feel for the move zone. And then when that guy would push off of him and convert outside, TD had enough strength and play speed and just overall like snap and power coming out of breaks that he was easily able to get caught up. But I think everybody can have height, weight, speed, their eyes or length. But the most important thing when you watch a guy is when there's a little bit of separation created, what does he do? Does he freak out? Does he put his eyes on the quarterback, or does he put his eyes on the receiver and connect to him? Because that was something that I had to figure out early on in my career was if a guy creates separation, you must connect to him before you look back. And I think that was something that Thomas always did a really good job of. If he did create some separation, he put his eyes on the hips of his receiver, connect to him, get in phase, and then look back. So I think the obvious characteristics of height, weight, speed, strength at the top end of the route, how well he can get out of a break and convert. But once that guy does create separation, how does he connect back to him? And I think your eyes and putting your eyes on that receiver are big, because if you put your eyes back on the quarterback, that just gives them another opportunity to create another yard or two of separation. These guys are so good now that they're just going to put it right on them.
I think it's fascinating. So while you guys were talking about that, I actually pulled up just forced incompletions and I sorted it by linebackers. So number one in the league is Devin White, who, you know, was a big time. Everybody knew he was a big time player coming out. He's been that player with Tampa, and somebody that has incredible change of direction, quickness. Combine that with, you know, some of the athleticism that he has. And then you look at next in line is TJ Edwards from the Eagles, who, you know, was somebody that's always relied on instincts, outstanding instincts. And then right behind him, you get a couple names in Quay Walker, young guys, Quay Walker, a rookie, mm-hmm. Devin Lloyd, a rookie, both guys who were super long and rangy.
Yeah.
And you could see both those guys. I mean, Devin Lloyd had a bunch of picks at Utah. You could see Quay Walker, how he was used when Georgia's blowing the doors off everybody, what he could do in coverage. So it's kind of all those skills, Luke, like you were talking about, all coming together with those guys. And that next breed, we've talked about it a little bit on here of, you know, the length of off the ball linebackers being a big time factor in the passing game. And now, I mean, USC, if you see them play on Friday night, they have one of the most unique looking players. They have a 6'6", like 210-pound off the ball linebacker, Eric Gentry. I don't know if you've seen him, Buck. He transferred from Arizona State. Mm-hmm. I mean, he looks like he's a string bean out there. He has the wing. He looks like Kevin Durant out there at the second level. And when you're playing all these spread teams and they're throwing all over the place, man, that length is a huge asset with kind of where the game is and where it's going.
Yeah, absolutely. They cover guys by just being big. And, you know, I spent some time up in Buffalo with Tremaine Edmonds, and it's like, buddy, like, you are so big, you are so long, you're so tall and wide that just with your length, you cover so much ground. You can let a tight end get a little bit on top of you on a vertical route because you're 6'5", you put your arm up in the air, you're 7'5". You cover so much space just by being long. And I think guys that understand kind of, hey, this is the amount of space I can take up on the field. It allows them to take more risks. But with all this like little quick three-step drop spacing concepts, space gets eaten up really quickly with these guys that have really good length. Tremaine Edmonds, like you said, the kid from SC, Devin Lloyd, all these young guys that are so long. And I think the game's kind of transitioned that way because in college, it's, you know, a lot of it is just spread them out, hit spots on the field. And the guys that have success in college are the guys that can just eat up space by just being big and long.
You know, look, I love having you on, and I can tell that you love sharing and mentoring players throughout the league. So I want to give you an opportunity to provide some more mentorship to some young people that may listen to the podcast. What is one nugget that a young player can glean by watching film? Like, what is something in your process that can help a young player look at tape and begin to take what they see and put it into action on the field?
Well, I think a lot of it is how do I fit in my defense against this look? So you can watch tape a bunch and, oh, they're going to run wide zone, or they're going to run this pass concept, or they're going to run, downhill power. And then you get into a game and you know it's coming, but you don't know where anyone fits on your defense, right? So then you can't play as fast. But if you line up and you say, hey, this is the formation. Okay, boom. I know the formation. I know what they're going to do. Now, where does everybody on my defense fit in there? Where do I need to be? How can I get an advantage based on alignment? Where is my help? Like if we're playing quarters and they're 3x1 and a guy runs, he runs vertical on me and I have help over the top. Okay, boom. I know it's three verticals. I have help over the top. I can let that guy get a little bit high on me. So then my angle underneath him is really good. I can convert to any in-breaking route. I think a lot of it has to do with not only what are they going to do, understanding how they're going to play offense, but where do I fit in my defense in this play, especially in the run game? Like, where's my run gap? Where's support coming from? If I get a pooler, where am I spilling it to a support guy or am I knocking it back to an inside-out run guy? I think that's one thing that is super easy to do because all you got to do is sit in a chair at the facility, watch tape, click through stuff, boom. Top run play is this. If we're in cover three and I have a rotation here, this is where I need to fit. This is why I need to fit there. And this is where my help's going to be. I think that allows you to play a lot faster.
Oh, that's excellent advice, man. We're almost done here, but a couple more questions and we'll let you run. We've talked a lot about off the ball linebackers, your area of expertise, but I know you obviously understand the whole picture there on defense. Another trend that we've kept an eye on is with the ball coming out quick. You see it at the college level. It's obviously made its way to the NFL. It's hard to get home as an edge rusher. And we've talked about maybe adjusting a little bit to where maybe the league had been chasing speed and off the edge, speed, bendy, loose athletes. Now it's almost, in talking to some D-line coaches, they focus on just kind of rush, crush, and close. They want guys that can really kind of collapse the pocket because then even if they don't get home, at least I'm affecting and impacting the quarterback. I'm able to restrict space and crush them. You see there's a need maybe to look a little bit different for what you're looking for on the edge, talking about edge setters and pass rushers.
We've done a good job with our defense in Carolina in that situation. You know, obviously everybody talks about Brian Burns. He's having a fantastic season. He's the prototype rush guy. He's physical. He's long. He's super athletic. He can bend. But the thing with these edge rushers sometimes is if they get too high, that quarterback, this is Aaron Rodgers, step up and then get out. And then he's out wide and he can make all plays with his arm. But when he can't do that is when he has vertical pressure inside. And we've got a young guy, Derek Brown, that's really good at that. He's not going to show up on the stat sheet a whole lot, but he creates so many problems for interior offensive linemen. He's big, he's physical, he's explosive, he's strong. And those two guys on the same side of the ball are a problem. Burns with his rush off the edge, but ultimately just like that vertical pressure with a guy like Derek Brown, where he can just eat up guards and push the pocket. And you know, all these quarterbacks, they want to be able to step up in the pocket and not get stepped on by offensive linemen. They don't want to get bumped. They don't want to get nicked. But guys like Derek Brown, they can, that's the fastest way to the quarterback is right through that, the inside three guys in the offensive line. So I think there's a big, you know, Fletcher Cox can do that. What's the guy he plays in Philly now? He's a rookie out of Georgia. Jordan Davis. Just these big physical pocket pushers, man, it makes it so difficult for these quarterbacks to step up because not only can they not see, but that guard's right in their lap.
Of late, we're beginning to see these linebackers who are being very successful blitzing and getting to the quarterback. What's the key ingredient that you must have if you're going to be an outstanding blitzer as an off-the-ball linebacker?
I wish I could tell you the secret on it. I was terrible. I was terrible as an off the ball blitzer. We had to call certain blitzes for me to blitz just to keep offenses honest because everybody knew that TD was the blitzer. TD was super explosive.
You're a tendency breaker.
They would turn protection away from me all the time. And they'd just be like, Luke, we need you to blitz. We know you stink at it. We know you don't want to do it. But we have to do it just to keep people honest. So that would be my one recommendation. Whatever I was doing, you don't need to do that. And I think a lot of it's feel. I think a lot of it has to do with how they protect. But I think a lot of these guys that are really good blitzers, they've got a great feel. They're explosive. And they weren't like me because I was absolutely awful as an off-the-ball blitzer. TD would tell you the same thing. McD would tell you the same thing. Wilkes would tell you the same thing. They'd be like, hey, Luke, we're going to draw this up for you. We just kind of need you to hold the point, push the pocket. We got some stuff drawn up for the guys on the edges to make some plays. So just don't mess this up for us. I'm like, perfect. I can do that for you.
I love that. The humility here of Luke Kuechly. Look, this has been so much fun, man. It's been a blast to have you on. Last question, and we'll leave you with this one. But I know in youth sports, you're always trying to, as a coach, not only teach these kids and help them grow as football players, but you're trying to have some fun with them as well. Is there a story? Is there anything you guys have done to really have a fun memory for these kids as you guys march on to Orlando and chase a Pop Warner National Championship?
You know what was really cool? Our head coach last night, so we won the little city championship, the regional one, and then you obviously go to Florida for the Pop Warner Championship, but you don't know who you're going to play. And last night, the Pop Warner League organization, they had a little live stream that was like a bowl game announcement show, and they went through all the different brackets from – you know, 13U all the way down to 8 or 9U. And we went to a local bar. We streamed it onto a big screen TV. We had, you know, chicken fingers, chicken wings, burgers, all that stuff. And all the kids watched it. It was like a reveal show that you see in, you know, March Madness. So that was super fun. All the kids were super excited. The team that we play is from California. It's going to be a ton of fun. And those kids, man, I just remember thinking back when I was that age and playing youth sports and how much fun it was to play the game, obviously, but like how fun it was when you could go to restaurants with your buddies and you run around, you get drinks. There was a gazillion lemonades at the bar last night that these kids are drinking: pizza, wings, burgers, chicken fingers. That to me was the most fun part. And they got to watch this little reveal show on a screen TV in a private room at a bar. It's kind of fun. If you don't think that's fun, then I don't know what's fun.
I absolutely love it. The only thing that they don't know, Buck, and you know this, and we're all, you know, of similar age, when we were kids, when you'd go to those team parties at the end of the year, like we couldn't wait to get there because we could go play Pac-Man and we could go play Donkey Kong. And now these kids are like, yes, dude, I'm not, what arcade games? Like, what is that? Like, I got all that crap on my phone. Right? Why would I go?
Yeah. Well, you know what was funny is we played our regional game last week up in Concord, North Carolina. And a mile from the stadium, there was a Dave and Buster's. So the whole team and all these kids went to Dave and Buster's. And these kids were running around Dave and Buster's in their little flip-flops with their football pants on, with their little sweaty undershirts on. Having a great time. So it's so fun to watch the kids because they're so excited and they have so much fun. And man, it just, I enjoy it.
I love it. I love it, man. Well, this has been a lot of fun for us, man. Anytime we get you on, we enjoy it. You always offer a lot. We learn a lot and we have a lot of fun along the way. So best of luck to you and your team. We need to have you out. After this is over, we need a recap. So we need to know how the team did.
Done.
And we'll be rooting for you as you go there, man. You're the best, man. Hey, appreciate you so much. This has been a fun episode. Appreciate you guys hanging with us. Hope you've enjoyed it. We'll catch you next time right here on Move the Sticks.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later, because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
Live Nation presents Concert Week. Now through May 14th, get $25 tickets to over 5,000 shows. That's up to 75% off a summer full of your favorite artists like 21 Savage, Alanis Morissette, Cage the Elephant, Celeste Barber, Dierks Bentley, Fade, Hootie and the Blowfish, Janet Jackson, Kidz Bop Kids, Meghan Trainor, Pistol Puma, Sarah McLachlan. Get tickets to more than 5,000 summer shows for just $25. Until now through May 14th. Visit LiveNation.com/Concert Week to learn more and plan your summer with Sean Paul, Sum 41, 30 Seconds to Mars, oh, and Two Door Cinema Club.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks,
Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cash back on purchases. And pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
Hey guys, back at the playground again, huh?
Yep. You know what this playground could use? A wine country.
Heck yeah! And some waves, so we could go surfing.
Oh, yeah. Ah, love that!
A redwood forest would be cool.
I'm in!
Ah, ski slopes.
Let's do it!
Can a girl go shopping?
Yeah, baby!
Wait! Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.
Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org.